Worried about letting someone else pick out the perfect avocado for your perfect impress them on the third date guacamole? Well, good thing Instacart shoppers are as picky as you are. They find ripe avocados like it's their guac on the line. They are milk expiration date detectives. They bag eggs like the 12 precious pieces of cargo they are. So let Instacart shoppers overthink your groceries so that you can overthink what you'll wear on that third date. Download the Instacart app to get free delivery on your first three orders while supplies last. Minimum $10 per order. Additional terms apply.
The Bernstein and McKnight Show. Copy. Middays on the Score.
Is that Cookie Monster?
Oh, that's good. Of course it is.
I think it was. Bernstein and McKnight, Sports Radio 670, The Score. We're keeping an eye, of course, on the Open Championship to see who is going to put himself in position for the weekend to take that claret jug. And our guy, Tommy Fleetwood.
We get a lot of riding on Tommy Fleetwood here as a show. You may not know it, but I put down a couple of bets on about four or five golfers for every major championship. Won the first two, or I had a golfer hit in the first two, missed the third one. Who saw that coming? And then have four down here. And Tommy Fleetwood, it was my biggest bet and happened to be the longest odds guy, I bet. No, I could be wrong. I think Xander Schauffele had longer odds. And if he hits, the Bernstein McKnight Show will eat fairly well here next week.
Well, as we did yesterday when Mitch bought pizza for everybody out of nowhere yesterday.
He did?
I made the Bernstein mistake.
Oh, I didn't get
not everybody,
I,
apparently.
I had to go to physical therapy. Yeah, I didn't have any pizza.
Yeah, but Lou Malnati's for everybody. But I made the Bernstein mistake, man. And it is going back for the second piece of sausage pizza when one would suffice if I gave it enough time to settle and satisfy. I'm always chasing it with that, and I said it as I'm doing it. I said I'm making the mistake. I'm going to regret this.
But there are so many caveats in that sentence. The one would suffice if. I mean, really, one suffices if the sentence ends at "it would suffice." But they're done that. You got to qualify it afterwards. That means you should have had the second slice.
No, because if I give it enough time. Your body adjusts and your body will send signals to your brain that this is good, this is enough. But if you're eating quickly and if you're just enjoying the taste in your mouth and not allowing your system to sort of catch up and send those signals, that's when the signals are, you idiot.
Dan, I do have a question.
Yes?
Whose mans are you?
What do you mean?
This is like trying to find ways to not eat things that are good.
Yes, because I regret it later when I feel bad for eating too much.
Yeah, but I don't get it.
That's future Dan's problem. That's not current Dan's problem.
You just wanted more of the taste.
I did.
That's how eating works. Am I done tasting this? No, I'm not. I'm going to have more.
I know, but that's the advice I've always gotten is that's when you just have to allow, you drink a little bit of water, and that way you can send your body the message that it is full.
It's not a message I'm willing to send.
See, you're treating eating like a task. Rick and I, it's more of a lifestyle than anything.
Really is. Yeah, just kind of a constant,
That's one thing with a lot of people that are in shape or try and give me advice on getting healthy, they treat food like it's just a way to get energy as opposed to something you can also enjoy.
No, I want both. I want both. To me, it's the regret of feeling really bad. Yeah. Like maybe if you're an actual certified card-carrying fat, maybe you just don't have, you don't rue overdoing it, or you don't rue the indulgences because you've built up psychic scar tissue, or maybe actual scar tissue. I don't know.
Maybe we actually feel like crap and just don't know it because we're so used to it.
That could be.
Maybe this is just feeling.
Or maybe you're just, your general resting feeling is one that I would consider feeling crappy. I don't know.
Probably.
When we talk Open Championship, by the way, the Open Championship coverage on The Score is presented by the BMW Championship at Medina Country Club, August 13th through August 18th. Visit BMWChampionship.com. I want to thank a listener who sent in a really cool little statistical quirk.
Okay.
All right. Now, I saw this.
Are we going to work ourselves into a trivia question here?
Do you want to?
I kind of do. It's been a while since we've done a good trivia question.
Okay.
We do bad ones all the time.
Yeah, we do bad ones all the time. See, this one I found fascinating, and it's just one of these baseball things. And I vetted it. I wanted to make sure. I love when people send stuff in, but my question is this true? Is this right?
Yeah, of course. You got to
okay?
vet.
So I bounced it off of Scott from Davenport.
Good start.
Who happens to be in Cooperstown with Chris Komka. So it's like, right, I had like a perfect nexus of baseball intelligence, literally like in a mountainside lair in Cooperstown.
They
right?
don't know. They can actually read the plaque that's next to them.
And apparently they're meeting up with Jay Jaffe, I guess. That they're,
you're kidding
There's going to be some like super nerd festival.
Oh, my God.
There. And I guess Kamka got this.
I thought there were rules on how many baseball nerds can be in one spot. What if we lose?
Right.
What if something happens?
So he rolls a hand grenade out there. Then what happens?
A designated survivor?
Yeah, there should be. A designated baseball nerd survivor who can't be in Cooperstown. But thanks to Bob from Schiller Park. And Bob from Schiller Park sent in this.
Okay.
There are only two players in MLB history that have at least 300 home runs, 300 stolen bases, and 100 triples. In their careers.
Okay, Ricky Henderson.
No.
You're kidding. Ricky Henderson doesn't have, he doesn't have 100 triples. That has to be what it is.
Maybe hit more home runs. This was vetted. This was checked.
300 home runs, 300, at least. 300 home runs, 300 stolen bases, and 100 triples.
Mm-hmm.
Oh, man. I really thought I had Ricky Henderson here. Did you successfully guess either one of these players?
One only. It took me a little bit of time, but one I got. The other, I would have been here all day and would never have gotten it. And then when I got it, I said, really, can that be true? And then I went to his baseball reference page, and I checked him out, and I looked at his comparables. And he is an incredibly underrated baseball player.
Both Hall of Famers?
No.
Neither Hall of Famers?
One is. One is a big boy table Hall of Famer.
Big boy table Hall of Famer.
That Mays guy was pretty good.
Yeah, that's one.
Mays, okay.
Yeah, Mays had 660 home runs, 338 steals, and 140 triples. That's the easy one.
That is the big boy table.
Yeah, that's the best center fielder who ever lived. That's
Mario Machado?
Oh, very good. Mario. Yeah, very good. Also, stop texting and telling me that Mario Machado or Manny Machado are having comparable seasons to Jose Abreu. Stop doing that.
Okay, the other guy played 19 seasons. His rookie year was 1989, and he played until 2007, from age 24 to age 42.
Oh, so later call-up, not a Hall of Famer.
Correct. Not going to be a Hall of Famer.
Not going to be a Larry Walker. Nope, he was up earlier than 89.
About that level of player, he played for 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, 8 teams.
Can I get a... Will a position completely give it away? Because this is... I mean, it's... This is...
He's...
It's not John Jaha.
He's played all over the outfield. He's played multiple outfield spots. It is not John Jaha.
Well, I had to check.
Nope.
It's not Torrey Hunter.
This guy had three...
He
had 304 homers, 320 stolen bases... 124 triples and 6 gold gloves. It is really difficult.
Yeah, but that's tough.
But think about this: when Scott from Davenport asked this of Chris Komka, he immediately was like, "Oh, that's blah," and just immediately had it.
Okay, you're gonna have to give it to me.
No,
I am.
No, I don't. And this is amazing.
6 gold gloves.
Not one texter has it. That's how hard this is. Texts are flying in right now to 67011. And not one texter. Some of the names that are coming 80, up.
89 to when?
To 2007. And okay. Some of the names coming up are in this player's list of comparables. But this is amazing. Amazing. And our texters generally, I can count on the collective wisdom of the text line.
Yeah.
That whatever
usually
that,
you find somebody that logs in.
Oh, somebody's got it. Or somebody we knew this from some sort of bar bet or something. Because I love questions like this. Because this is one where when you're at the bar or when you're out fishing, you're going to be able to use this. And you're going to be able to win money off somebody or have people sitting around the table in the lodge having fun with it.
This is brutal.
Still no. Oh, there it is. Somebody got it. There are two. The two people got it right now. Now three have it. I think people have been looking it up, or people have been.
Very
nice.
Edmonds came up after 89.
You want the answer?
Yeah, I think I got to have it, Dan. I not getting Ricky Henderson in the club was kind of a shock to me.
Ladies and gentlemen, the answer is Steve Finley.
You're kidding.
I am not.
Steve Finley.
Steve Finley is the other. He and Willie Mays are the only with 300 homers, 300 steals, and 100 triples ever. That's that. Now,
Steve Finley.
Yup. How long would that have taken you?
Oh, I mean, just forever. Absolutely forever.
And then my favorite part
Ricky Henderson had 66 career triples.
Which is fairly low.
What a bum.
It's right? Incredibly low.
My favorite part of this is if you've been listening for all the years we've been doing baseball reference, cross-referencing and the comps, what's the name that I always think of? There was a name that kept coming up, that keeps showing up.
Oh, isn't it Veta Pinson or something like that?
Nicely done.
Yeah, it's okay. Veta Pinson.
I'm going to take...
I get updates for Boers and Bernstein a lot. I remember.
Yeah, there you go. It was always Veta Pinson, right? Here are the... going from 10 to 1, Steve Finley's most comparable players.
Veta Pinson.
Ready?
Veta Pinson.
Are you ready? Okay. Chili Davis, Dave Parker, Bobby Abreu, Luis Gonzalez, Willie Davis, Bernie Williams, Dwight Evans, Torrey Hunter, Johnny Damon, and number one, Veta Pinson.
I think I guessed four of those guys.
Yep. That's awesome. Yep.
That's absolutely awesome. Do you think that Ricky Henderson hit fewer triples because being on third base meant he was less likely to get another stolen base?
Yes.
That he pulled up at second base?
That's a great thought,
like, he's
detective.
Got third. Like, oh, I could take third if I wanted to, or I could steal third.
I'm just there anyway. I'm going to coast in here.
Stealing home is kind of difficult even for me. I got to lay up at second base and then walk into third.
That is what you call a perfectly reasonable hypothesis.
I guarantee you that happened on at least a number of potential triples for Ricky Henderson. I have some news for you. Can I give you some news? Carl Edwards has been activated to the Cubs roster, so we'll ask Theo about Carl Edwards' journey through the minor leagues and what he's hopefully figured out. Randy Rosario goes down, and Dan, I have your Cubs lineup as they get back into action today against the San Diego Padres. Would you like it?
Yes, I would.
Of course you would. Albert Almora Jr. leads off. He's in center field. Javi Baez is at short. Chris Bryant is in left. Anthony Rizzo is at first base. Addison Russell at second.
With Mario Machado.
Jason Hayward's going to be in right field. David Bote is at third. Martin Maldonado is catching. John Lester is pitching. And unless I've missed my guess, just one more question here. That's the same lineup as the win that we were at against the Reds, is it not?
It sounds like to me.
I believe that is the same lineup. I think that's the same one that Joe's running out there again. So run it back, Joe. Get another win. As the Cubs have, 5-1 since coming out of this is mission accomplished for the Cubs and their stated goal after the All-Star break.
I wonder what they're going to do to keep guys cool. Is this one where when the pitcher comes off, you make sure that he's got a cold compress on the back of his neck? Is there some accepted best practices here?
Jersey changes? I mean, otherwise you're wearing the sweat. Ted Lilly used to have this all the time. I mean, he was just kind of a naturally like super sweaty dude. So he'd go through, I think, like three jerseys in a typical start.
Kopech.
You got to do, oh man, that guy's got a whole thing going on too. Yeah, you got to do little stuff like that to just make sure you manage.
I wonder how they prepare for this. Like what right now that the equipment guys are doing and the support staff is doing to make sure. I mean, obviously you urge hydration throughout the game.
Oh yeah. Well, if you haven't hydrated all day yesterday, you've already kind of missed out on some time. So that's the push from the training staff, is making sure everybody's drinking water yesterday.
The segment brought to you by The Art of Pizza. The Art of Pizza is celebrating 30 years in Lakeview. The Art of Pizza, located at 3033 North Ashland. Stop in for up to 18 varieties of hot, fresh, stuffed, pan, and thin crust slices. Delivery begins 11 a.m. every day. Call 773-327-5600 or visit artofpizzachicago.com.
Could go for a slice. Let's change gears here a little bit because we've got something going on in town that's making just a little bit of news. College football is closer than you might imagine, and a longtime friend of the Score, Jerry DiNardo of the Big Ten Network, is going to join us and talk a little college football next. Bernstein McKnight, 670.
Worried about letting someone else pick out the perfect avocado for your perfect impress-them-on-the-third-date guacamole? Well, good thing Instacart shoppers are as picky as you are. They find ripe avocados like it's their guac on the line. They are milk expiration date detectives. They bag eggs like the 12 precious pieces of cargo they are. So let Instacart shoppers overthink your groceries so that you can overthink what you'll wear on that third date. Download the Instacart app to get free delivery on your first three orders while supplies last. Minimum $10 per order. Additional terms apply.
This is Sports Radio 670 The Score and 670thescore.com. Chicago Sports Station.
Let's start with the shrimp. In a medium-sized bowl, toss the shrimp with a half a teaspoon of red pepper flakes, 2 tablespoons of olive oil, 3/4 teaspoon of salt, and set aside. Over a high heat, quickly add the shrimp to the pan in a single layer. Cook without stirring until the bottoms turn spotty brown, about 30 to 60 seconds. Off heat, turn the shrimp over and add brandy. Let stand off heat until brandy warms slightly, about 5 to 10 seconds, and return pan to high heat. Wave flame over skillet until brandy ignites. Shake skillet until flames stop. Transfer shrimp to bowl and set aside.
Oh, I'm in.
Hungry now.
I am in for that. And if you watch the Jerry DiNardo videos, you get to see all of that done right in front of your
eyes. You learn some stuff, man.
All kinds of stuff going on there. Jerry DiNardo is a man who knows Big Ten college football better than anybody. He's on Twitter at Jerry DiNardo. The Big Ten Network analyst joins us on the Alpamonte Ford Hotline. Alpamonte Ford, 500 new and used vehicles to choose from. Jerry, how are you?
I'm doing great. I'm not sure that was fair about the shrimp dish, but hey, it's been 100 years. It's great to talk to you two guys. How are you doing?
I know.
Great to have you on.
It's been a while. Doing great. By the way, what is your favorite dish to prepare and your favorite dish to eat, if they're different things?
Well, my favorite pasta dish is the tomato vodka sauce, which I learned, you know, from Chicago restaurants. You know, I didn't grow up with it, but when I was in Chicago, I had a restaurant partner that grew up in Chicago. That's where I learned that dish. We do a lot of grilled oysters at home. You know, we love those. Lemon chicken, you know, just a lot of the traditional Italian stuff. But I also, you know, I've learned how to do jerk chicken. I've tried to learn how to do some different things that I've never, you know, never did or never ate, rather, as I was growing up. So I'm really not afraid to do anything, you know, especially because I don't have to really show the video to anybody on the ones that I mess up.
Good self-editing, Jerry. Is the biggest story heading into this college football season in the Big Ten replacing Urban Meyer at Ohio State, or do you have a bigger one on your mind?
I'd say that's one of them. You know, Michigan was picked, as you guys know, to win the conference. I think that's one of the reasons is because Urban's no longer at Ohio State. I think if Urban was there, Ohio State would have been picked, probably not by as big a margin as they have had. But I think the one thing that is on everybody's mind is the college football playoffs. I know this. I was in favor of the committee when it first started. Now I'm against it. I've lost all confidence in the committee because last year when Georgia lost in the championship game and was still ranked in the final poll at 5 ahead of Ohio State, that's when I thought there was way too much bias in the committee. It wasn't objective, and honestly, I've thrown my arms up with the committee.
Both you and Jim Delaney have thrown their arms up. He went off, has gone off on the College Football Playoff Committee. Is this something that's going to reverberate loudly through the NCAA, or do you worry that this will fall on deaf ears?
Well, Connor, this is, you know, it's about the commissioners. The NCAA has nothing to do with the college football playoff, and these commissioners will never turn it over. It's the only non-championship, non-sponsored by the NCAA championships. That's why you don't see the blue circle with the NCAA logo at the championship. So this is really about the commissioners, and I think there lies the problem, right? The SEC commissioner is probably very happy the way things are, so without the SEC on board, you very rarely get something done. Without Jim Delaney on board in the past, you rarely get something done. I think they overrepresent the commissioners, if you will. So I think the discussion will become this, Connor. If, in fact, the committee is struggling, because it's a lot different than the first committee. This committee has to live with the sins of the father, right? You know, do we get all these teams in? Do we get a group of five team in instead of a power five? They've got all this baggage. The first committee didn't have the baggage, and the first committee had a bunch of football people on it that knew the game. Okay, so if we lose confidence, if enough people in the country lose confidence in the committee, they'll keep the committee, but they'll make it a bigger playoff. So we'll see expansion because the margin of error will be decreased. That's where I see it going. So I think you're going to go to six teams, you're going to go to eight teams, and I think that's how they're going to find a solution.
Is Lovie Smith coaching for his job?
You know, I don't know. It's a great question. Dan, here's how I feel about that, having been in that situation. Like, you know, I'll give you a couple examples. We're at Colorado, which we eventually won the national championship, but in our third year, we won one game. We were getting worse. The head coach, Bill McCartney, was sitting at his desk. The athletic director came in and put a bunch of papers on his desk. Bill thought he was getting fired, and that was his buyout. It was a contract extension because they believed in his plan. You see what's going on in Nebraska. I think Scott Frost could win one or two games this year. I mean, I think he'll win more, and they would still have confidence. So when you say that about Lovie, the reason, the answer to that question is only in Josh's hands or the university's hands. Because regardless of how many games they win this year, do they still believe in his plan? The amount of games you win is the most obvious indication that the plan's good. But, I mean, Illinois has fired coaches. They've had one right after another. I mean, is 4 years enough, really, if it isn't a good year? I would say this to you. If you don't believe in the plan, it's enough. If you believe in a plan, it's not enough.
So, Jerry, I thoroughly enjoyed watching a lot of Purdue football last year. I did not expect to. But when you saw Rondale Moore did what he did on the opening week, the opening 2 weeks, really, it opened some eyes. Does Jeff Brohm and his crew have enough to actually improve in this season to put something together? Or is this, like you say, you know, a process that needs to be trusted a little bit longer?
Well, I think the fact that they're in the West gives them a chance. I think, you know, probably everybody but Illinois actually has a chance to win the West. It's not the best division in college football, but it's the most balanced division in college football. And I think Purdue's one of those type of teams. I find it fascinating watching these ex-quarterbacks that were offensive coordinators became head coaches. I always say they aren't coaching the game during the game. They're playing the game. And Jeff Brohm is one of those guys. Steve Spurrier is one of those guys where he's standing on the sidelines. He's looking at the game through the quarterback's eyes. And they call unbelievable games. So I think Jeff Brohm is one of the best play callers. And I think play calling is an art. I think he's one of the best play callers in the country, and that gives him a chance, Connor and Dan, I think, to win the West. They don't have the best team. They won't have the best talent. They're still, like most young programs, deficient at the line of scrimmage because offense and defensive linemen are the two hardest positions to recruit.
The bottom of the hour is brought to you by Northwestern football. Don't miss your chance to watch Big Ten football at Ryan Field this fall as the number 17 Northwestern Wildcats host Ohio State, Iowa, and more. Season tickets on sale now at nusports.com. It's, for me, it gets a little odd assessing the expectations for Northwestern football because they're always the same. They set a very high standard, and they talk about doing really good things, and they're always good. Is it the same? Is anything changing? Do you know if the relationship that Pat Fitzgerald has with Morton Shapiro is such that where he can say, "Look, give me a little leeway here. Let's really compete. You know, let's give me a couple guys here, guys there that maybe I couldn't have gotten in 5 years ago." Or is this just another Northwestern football team?
Well, you know, Dan, I'm not sure we can assume that Pat doesn't already have that. Okay,
okay.
I mean, being at Vanderbilt for 4 years, I mean, they never turned down a prospect I really wanted. And 1 year, one prospect had a 720 on his SAT. Now, we all know 720 is not
totally
an SAT that would get into Vanderbilt. He graduated in 4 years. He was a 3.0 student. So this private school meeting with the faculty to discuss a student that doesn't have the normal grades, I remember I got someone admitted to Vanderbilt for this reason. He was a very good student at a poor high school. He went to a high school that had 50% tardy and absenteeism daily. He never missed or was late for a class for school in 4 years. admissions looked at that and they said, okay, his test scores aren't good enough, but this is special. So I don't want to assume that Pat's not getting that. I think Pat is getting probably everything that he wants to compete at the highest level that he wants. He's already been to the championship game, obviously. I don't think they'll ever be as talented as the Eastern representative, but you get to Indianapolis, you don't have to be more talented than the Eastern team. You just got to beat them that day. You just got to play them once. They got to get some turnovers. You got to make some big plays, and before you know it, you win the Big Ten championship without having near the talent that, say, an Ohio State has.
Jerry, you say that anybody could win the West. I'm with you on that. How much of a variable, though, is what Wisconsin does at the quarterback spot with Jack Cohn, presumably the incumbent, and incomer Graham Mertz looking pretty good in spring?
Yeah, you know, kind of it always starts with the quarterback, right? So that's going to be a major, major factor. The other two things I bounce off you about Wisconsin is their schedule's the toughest of all,
yeah,
of all the West teams. Their crossovers are Michigan State, Michigan, Ohio State. Crossovers always play somewhat of a role in division, in the championship of the division, especially the West playing East schools. The other thing that I think, you know, it's kind of the elephant in the room, can places like Iowa's kind of evolving a little bit, places like Wisconsin, Michigan's already made the move, can you still win at a high level lining up with a quarterback underneath the center, a fullback behind the quarterback, and a tailback behind the fullback? Mm-hmm. Now, there's no doubt that Wisconsin's probably going to continue to do that. But we saw with Don Brown's defense, they had 98 points scored against them the last two games against Florida and Ohio State, primarily because they play man coverage every down, and to play man coverage versus the spread attack nowadays is very difficult. So to line up in the pro formation and be explosive, look at Michigan State. No explosive on offense. They had the best defense in the country last year. They won seven games. We are in a time in college football where if you're not explosive offensively, you can win, but you can't win big. I think Wisconsin might be in that box a little bit.
You mentioned Nebraska before when you're talking about believing in the plan and believing in Scott Frost. I'm pretty bullish on this in no small part because he's got his guy at quarterback, and that connection is there. It's like a coach having his point guard and being able to trust that, and that if he stays healthy, why shouldn't we think that this is about ready to blow up?
Yeah, not only is it's not only like a coach having his point guard, it's like a coach who played point guard having his point guard.
Yep.
Back to the fact that the head coach played the quarterback position. So you're exactly right, Dan. I mean, there's no doubt. And you know, we hear this a lot, especially during media day. He's not only a great player, he's a great kid. Well, he is. I mean, Vince Martinez is a special personality, a special person. He's here for media days as a true sophomore. And when we asked Scott Frost why, he said because he can handle it. He didn't give us any coach talk. He said because he can handle it. If he's going to lead our team, he can handle media day. So I think Nebraska is going to be in the hunt. And my comment earlier about Nebraska wasn't because I don't think they're going to be any good. I was just trying to make a point about building a program. Nebraska-Iowa play the day after Thanksgiving, Friday in Lincoln. That very well could be the game that decides the Western Division champion.
Outside the Big Ten, all eyes are going to be on Alabama and Clemson yet again, because that's what we do every season. Nick Saban, though, saying that last year and late, having too many guys on his coaching staff focused on their future head coaching jobs was somewhat interesting to me. Is there trouble in paradise?
Well, I don't know if there's trouble. I mean, there's trouble in all paradises. It's just the level of trouble. You know, Nick has a lot of problems that we all would like to have, you know, losing national championship games. I think I've been through it as a head coach. I was through it when I was an assistant preparing for a national championship game at Colorado. I had been named the head coach of Vanderbilt. I had other things on my mind as we were getting ready for that game. So I do think this, what Nick is saying, is real. There's no doubt it's real that all these distractions with staff members, and he's kind of a victim of his own success because he has enough money to hire anybody he wants, so he's always hiring high-level coaches. He's a really hard taskmaster, so if you can get in there, learn his system, and get out in a couple years, it's kind of like boot camp. It's a good deal. So people look forward to getting there, and they also look forward to getting out. So I think what he's saying kind of is real, and it'll be interesting to see how he addresses it because he's smarter than most people coaching the game. And he usually figures things out before the rest of us do.
Jerry, last thing real quick, the Harbaugh-Urban Meyer stuff that's bubbled up, is that kind of a wrestling work, or is how much of this is real?
I don't know. It's so goofy. I don't know. Knowing Urban, someone probably had to tell him that he said it. I don't think he follows it that closely, and you never really know what Jim means when he says something. So I don't have a good feel for that whole situation.
Okay,
but it's something we can talk about, I guess. But I think we better fill the block with some other stuff too.
Fair enough. I get it, Jerry. Great catching
Thanks, Jerry.
Up. Thank you.
All right, see you, Kyle. See you, Dan.
That is Jerry DiNardo, always a delight. And really, the cooking videos, I'm not kidding. The cooking videos are good. You learn stuff.
They're terrific. I didn't know he did the pasta vodka sauce thing. That's my favorite. I'm going to go do the Jerry DiNardo vodka sauce recipe over the weekend.
The olive vodka? Yeah, because I remember, I think I mentioned something. Where was it? He ran into me, and he was asking me about my chicken cacciatore, like, what vegetables I put in, and how do I do it, and the whole thing. And he was genuinely interested.
No
like
kidding.
He wanted to know.
Yeah.
And now I haven't had that in a while, actually.
You and I both have something to cook over the weekend. The Midday Midway is on the way.
Yeah.
A sequel we all wanted. A musical rendition.
Yeah,
we all wanted it. A musical rendition of a classic and a send-up, I think, of a little bit of a legal issue.
Okay, I have a development that may make you want to sit in the middle seat on an airplane.
Nope.
Just give it a chance. Just keep an open mind. Sometimes design can be fascinating.
Are they giving me money?
No, just allow me to walk you through it,
okay.
And I'm going to see yay or nay on this. Okay?
All right. The Midday Midway is on the way. Bernstein and McKnight, 670 The Score.
This is Sports Radio 670 The Score and 670thescore.com, Chicago Sports Station.
The first half or the second half, they're two equal times.
Now, Midway.
The Midday Midway.
One, two.
Midway, the most important of the year.
Three, four.
The most exciting thing on the Midway.
Five, six, seven, eight.
Our objective is Midway.
9, 10.
You guys gotta meet me halfway out there.
So real, you can almost feel
the Midday Midway with Bernstein and McKnight on The Score.
The Midday Midway is brought to you by Door Systems. Call 1-800-THE-DOOR. We talk plenty of baseball, looking at what's going on with the White Sox, the angsty White Sox right now.
Yeah, some angst.
Combining the Steve Stone tweet storm with the comments of Jose Abreu and hearing from White Sox fans about maybe when expectations were heightened a little bit and then kind of came crashing back to earth. It's not fun. It's never fun to deal with it, but I think we also heard from some smart people who said, look, that I was enjoying what I could enjoy without getting silly about it.
Of course.
And this is just a trough in the graph that you'll deal with while you're continuing to enjoy some of the green shoots of a rebuild, and that's okay.
I had a college football chat with Jerry DiNardo. We talked a little bit of cooking as well.
Did a baseball trivia question.
Yeah, and a baseball trivia question that I did not get and was never going to get. It took a long time to get to Steve at Finley. Also, a little bit of Cubs roster news. Carl Edwards Jr. is back into the Cubs bullpen. Randy Rosario goes down. And I was wrong. The lineup for the, what was it, Wednesday's game, Thursday off day, Wednesday's game, it had Victor Caratini behind the plate. That's the difference. Martin Maldonado is in there today. So this one's just for funsies. Listener sent this to me on Twitter, and I really like the symmetry of thing. Here's the headline from Fox 59. Five guys arrested after fight at Five Guys Burgers and Fries in Florida. Police arrested five guys after a fight broke out at Five Guys Burgers and Fries in Stuart, Florida. According to the Orlando Sentinel, the police were called to the restaurant 12:30 p.m. on Wednesday. A woman told authorities that one of the men was arguing with another man. Someone threw a cup. A door was slammed in a man's face before an all-out brawl broke out, according to the police report obtained by the Orlando Sentinel. Three juvenile males and two adult males, 18-year-olds Keith Marine, and Lauren Pedron, were charged with this is the best part. They were charged with a fray.
Ooh, and members of the fray.
At the Martin County Jail. A fray, A-F-F-R-A-Y. Do you know what a fray is?
They were
charged with a fray.
I don't know. Is it like mayhem?
I don't know. It could be like racketeering. There's really no way of knowing. I'm sure we can look it up.
A fray.
An instance of fighting in a public place that disturbs the peace.
Cool word.
A fray.
You heard about the Piping Plovers and members of the Piping Plovers?
No. Tell me about the Piping Plovers.
They have made a nest on Montrose Beach, and it is a, it's not quite endangered, but it is close to being endangered. It's on the wind. The Piping Plover is a shorebird that has somewhat fragile nests, a shallow nests right in open area on the beach.
Oh, right on the beach.
Yeah, and
bye.
They apparently were, the bird community in Chicago is incredibly excited about the Piping Plovers, and they realized that eggs were laid there, and they've hatched. So there are Piping Plover chicks that are being referred to as little poofballs, and that's essentially what they are. They're absolutely adorable, and it is going to be to mean that a music fest is going to move. Because Mambi on the Beach, the music festival there, which was scheduled to be right there where the plover nest is, apparently they're in negotiations and are already agreeing that they are going to move further up or down the beach, and there's going to be a buffer zone that doesn't disturb the hatched Piping Plover chicks.
Is that right?
But yeah, it isn't quite the alligator in Humboldt Park, but I think it's really, really cool that everybody involved here, the Ornithological Society, and everybody is these, I guess technically they are endangered, but the people are giving them all their space, but there's, you know, the live webcams and everybody taking photos and all that, but they are apparently going to cause the revised site plan for Mambi or Mambi on the Beach. There are crowds every day coming to take pictures from distance of the plovers.
In the write-up, does it say anything about because the dog beach is at Montrose Beach, you know, where you can go out there and you run the dogs through the double doors and stuff, and they've got the, you know, you walk through the little culvert there before you get onto the beach, and there's dogs running all over the place. It's not anywhere near that, is it? Doesn't list that as concern?
It can't be, because they're going out of their way to protect these. I mean, these are the chicks here.
Oh,
yeah.
Oh,
yeah.
My question is, are they going to name one of the chicks Kyle Shorebird?
That gets a zackle. Jay Zawoski, I saw this on his Twitter, so I'm doing the story now. Paul McCartney is making his first foray into the world of theater. The musician has spent the past year writing a stage musical adaptation of the 1946 Frank Capra film It's a Wonderful Life. Ooh. McCartney has teamed up with writer Lee Hall, the screenwriter behind Billy Elliot and Rocket Man. Did you see Billy Elliot or Rocket Man,
both,
for that matter? I didn't see neither.
I've seen both.
I've heard good things about Billy Elliot.
And actually, the kid who plays Billy Elliot plays Bernie Taupin in Rocket Man.
That would be correct.
Yep.
Hall worked with Elton John on the West End adaptation of Billy Elliot the Musical, which opened in 2005. Writing a musical is not something that had ever really appealed to me, McCartney said in a statement. But Bill and I met up with Lee Hall, had a chat, found myself thinking this could be an interesting fun. It's a Wonderful Life is a universal story we can all relate to. I love It's a Wonderful Life. Of recent
Fine.
Years, it's gotten knocked a little bit. I don't know what song McCartney, like, dun, 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 and that's going to be staring over the bridge and looking at your death. Like, how is he going to write a song for the scene where he jumps off the bridge and the angel has to come in and save him?
He's going to reimagine Buffalo Girl.
If you can, he's not using existing Beatles catalog music.
No,
is
of course
he?
Not.
Okay.
But you know how McCartney writes. I mean, it's all this goes up, that goes down, happy,
jaunty,
happy, joy, joy.
Yeah,
you know?
It was always what John Lennon would decry as granny music.
I hated that
bang,
stuff.
Bang, Maxwell, Silver Hammer, like yep. that, all that kind of stuff. Yep. Obladi, obladi.
Uh-huh.
I was threatened by a catcher in the A's organization for when it was my job to play music during warm-ups. He came up. He was like a Paul Newman and Slapshot thing. He came up and he grabbed the cart out of the cart machine that was playing Obladi Oblada, and Frank Masters picked it up and broke it with his
end you.
He broke it with his fist, and then he left the press box. True story. All right, we have a redesign of middle seats on airplanes. It's called the S1 design from a Colorado-based startup. Picture this, 3 economy seats in a staggered layout, but the middle seat is the one slightly behind the aisle and window seats and slightly lower. So you're not sitting directly adjacent to 2 people. You've got plenty of shoulder room because the seat's back a few inches and down, and it's also 3 to 5 inches wider than the standard 18-inch seat. That little bit of stagger solves a bunch of problems. You get to spread out a little bit more. You're not shoulder to shoulder, and it fixes the armrest battle. The armrests are not a uniform height from front to back. The aisle and the window passengers rest their elbow on the front of the armrest, while the back lower area is there for the middle passenger. And they're designed for shorter domestic flights. They're saying they have been certified by the FAA, and they're incentivizing the companies by making this the materials are lighter than standard airline seats. So they're trying to show that they could cut fuel costs. And you know, right around the margins, they're looking to cut every little bit of weight from every flight. And it's not going to fix everything, but they do say that there are two airlines that will make these available by April or May of 2020. One of them is based in North America. So keep your eye open for a staggered, lowered, pushed-back middle seat that might not be hell in the sky.
I think I'm just too tall for a middle seat. I think it's just, yeah, it's some, at a certain point, it's just not going to work out, even if they do try and help you a little bit. That is the Midday Midway. We do it every day here on the Bernstein and McKnight Show. Theo Epstein, Cubs president of baseball operations, is coming up in just a couple. Don't go anywhere. We'll talk with Theo next. Bernstein McKnight, 670 The Score.
T-Mobile has invested billions to light up America's largest 5G network, from big cities to small towns, including right here in yours. And great coverage is just the beginning. Right now, families and small businesses can save up to 20% versus AT&T and Verizon when they switch. Visit your local T-Mobile store today.
Plan savings with 3 lines of T-Mobile Essentials versus comparable available plans. Plan features and taxes and fees may vary.